a controversial new move that could change the home lives of millions. For Marketplace, I'm Mark Garrison in for David Brancaccio. A proposed federal rule would outlaw smoking in public housing, setting up a new debate about the cost of public health and the role of government. The New York Times reports the Department of Housing and Urban Development will unveil the rule later today. Marketplace's Tracy Samuelson is covering this in New York, where such a rule would have outsized impact. Tracy, we've seen smoking bans in bars and restaurants, various other spaces. What's behind this new rule targeting public housing?
Well, the federal government has been pushing this idea for a couple of years now, and actually over 600 public housing agencies have already voluntarily banned smoking. There are three main benefits, according to a 2014 study by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. So first, there's eliminating secondhand smoke. Then the physical impact that smoke has on these apartments. And finally, potential fire hazards. The CDC estimates that a ban on smoking in all subsidized housing across the country could save almost $500 million a year, about two-thirds of that coming from healthcare savings related to secondhand smoke. So I'd say that eliminating that exposure is the main factor here. Head Secretary Julian Castro told The Times that the argument about secondhand smoke is over.
Okay, so there's the question also of enforcement. There's the question of, you know, people being asked to, restrict their behavior in their own private homes. How would this actually work operationally?
Right. I think that's the main pushback we'll see here. The argument that people, you know, as you said, in the privacy of their own homes should be able to do whatever they want, and that public housing authorities will really struggle to enforce this. So here in New York, we have the country's largest public housing agency with almost 200,000 apartments. Trying to monitor smoking would be a huge undertaking. More likely, this no smoking policy would be a part of the tenant's lease, and from there, violations would be reported in the form of complaints from neighbors.
And we'll see how that goes. Marketplace's Tracy Samuelson. Thanks. JCPenney will pay $50 million to settle a class action lawsuit in California. It accused the department store of tricking consumers by jacking up sticker prices so sales would appear to offer deeper discounts. The retailer denies it did anything wrong, but says it will change its advertising and pricing. Marketplace's Adrienne Hill looks at why it's so tempting to bend the rules when it comes to sales.
The guidelines about what a retailer can and can't do when it comes to sales, they're not straightforward.
There are a lot of rules out there, both in the states and at the federal level.
Mallory Duncan is with the National Retail Federation. From the feds, he says,
they're not explicit directions, but they admonish retailers to be very careful that price comparisons are made in such a way so as not to deceive consumers.
The gist is that if a retailer is going to call something a sale, it should be a sale. And a sale is a powerful tool.
Oh, it's like crack. Consumers love to get a deal. It's been that way forever.
Paula Rosenblum is a retail analyst for RSR Research.
This whole thing has been going on, this notion of markup, markdown, for as long as I've been in retail, and that's a really long time.
She says some of our sale craziness could be a little generational, and it could change as more young people get used to paying the full price at places like H&M and Zara. I'm Adrienne Hill for Marketplace.
And let's do the numbers. Stocks down in global trading so far. In the UK, shares down 0.6%. In Germany, shares down 1%. Asian markets were mixed. A community on America's West Coast is trying something unusual. Astoria, Oregon is tapping into the carbon market. Instead of chopping down trees, it'll make money by maintaining its forest. Jeff Tyler takes us there.
To reach the 3,700 acres of forest owned by the city, I ride along with Astoria's forester, Mike Barnes. We bounce along the twisty back roads through dense groves of spruce, hemlock, and Douglas fir. We also pass hillsides that have been reduced to a sea of stumps.
This is all gone.
We're looking at an aerial map and the clear cutting that has gone on around the city's watershed.
Oh, this is gone, this is gone. Gone, gone.
Astoria could cut as much as 3% of its forest every year. Instead, Barnes says city leaders decided to cut fewer trees and try something new.
We're foregoing increased harvest in the future and staying at a low level and monetizing the carbon that we're sequestering.
An Oregon law requires power companies to compensate for their emissions. One way is to purchase and conserve forests, which absorb carbon from the atmosphere and sequester it. In return for protecting some trees for 40 years, Astoria will get $2 million. But some town leaders remain skeptical.
I think carbon offsets are kind of silly.
Russ Warr is a member of Astoria's City Council. He doesn't believe that protecting the trees will make any difference for the environment. At the same time, he could not pass up the easy revenues.
We're promising not to log some of it for a whole bunch of money, and we weren't going to log it anyway, so in my opinion, that's free money.
But from the buyer's perspective, it's important to lock in Astoria's low rate of logging.
They could actually cut a lot more.
Sheldon Zakreski is with the Climate Trust, which invests utility money in projects that reduce carbon emissions. In this case, Astoria's trees.
This is actually providing them an incentive not to cut. So this is actually preventing them from pursuing more aggressive harvesting, which is something they could do.
Now that Astoria has set a precedent, Zakreski says other cities, even counties and states, could also cash in on their forests by not cutting them down. In Astoria, Oregon, I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
And finally, television's most coveted time slot is taking a turn unheard of in its half-century history. CBS says The Late Show with Stephen Colbert will air after the Super Bowl. It's the first time a late-night talk show has followed the big game. Some 100 million plus will watch the matchup, giving Colbert easily the biggest audience of his career. From Montclair State University today, I'm Mark Garrison with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
"What is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?"
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.